I am fascinated, intrigued, and honored by the intricacies of this world. They are magnificent, marvelous.
You need to know that you're okay just the way you are. What succeeded in you as a child,
what you've been through, matters.
This podcast is designed for you. Love on a mission in a world where human experience is lacking.
My name is Ginger Wilk, and we're here to talk about that which matters.
Welcome to That Which Matters. I'm so excited for us to be in season number 3. And I'm grateful for all of you who have been faithful in listening to all of the episodes. We have done some exciting things through the course of the 2 seasons. We've talked about the power of words. We've talked about mentoring. We've talked about shame. We've talked about relationships, hope, dreams. We've talked about healthy communities, authority figures, and even how birthdays can be very difficult for us in our lives. We've talked about the emotions, anger, fear, sadness, happiness. We've explored our triggers. We've talked about forgiveness. We've talked about the power of emotional support animals. We've talked about rejection. We've talked about the young generation and how they perceive things and the trauma that they've been through. And we had a guest, John Neely, at the end of our time together who talked about mentoring and also about addiction. And it has just been marvelous. I'm so grateful for all of you. Please continue to listen. Please continue to share these episodes with people that you know. Please give me a 5-star review if you believe I deserve one. And I welcome your comments and questions that you might have. And so we're going to launch right into season 3, and today we're going to be talking about self-perception and self-doubt. It's so important that we understand the way that we perceive ourselves. Remember what I said a long time ago in the beginning of the season, that truth is one thing, but our perception sometimes can be stronger than the truth. The way that we see things is very, very important, and to assess that and to adjust that is critical so that we may be able to go forward in our lives and be successful in the things that we are encountering. And so one of the things I want to bring out in the idea and concept of self-perception is the imposter syndrome. Again, I'm not an expert on the imposter syndrome. There's definitely people who study this day and night, but I know enough about it to have experienced it in some of the clients that I've spoken with and seen it in my own life at times. And the definition is the persistent inability to believe that one's success is deserved or that it has been legitimately achieved as a result of one's own efforts or skills. So how this comes out is we're in some sort of a situation and we really feel like we're an imposter. We really feel like it's going to be discovered any day that we don't deserve to be there at all, that we're some sort of fraud. And I think about a movie that was out a long time ago in the 80s. It was called Tootsie. And those of you that are older will remember that movie. Dustin Hoffman starred in that movie, and he was just this struggling actor that was trying to get any type of work. He tried out for a role for a woman in a soap opera, dressed all up, got into this outfit, and just gave it a shot. I just need a part. It's going to be a couple of episodes, and then I'll make the money I need. Turns out he became very popular in this role, and through that it became so complicated because he fell in love with the leading lady, but she thought he was a woman, and there were all sorts of media coverages on this character, and he knew that any day, if he just wasn't able to give that voice of a woman, if he was, you know, dressing somewhere or undressing somewhere, it was going to be discovered that he wasn't who everybody thought he was. And I think about that concept of that movie. It's a silly concept. It was a very funny movie. It was touching at times. But our lives sometimes are like that. We feel like we're sort of all dressed up for a role, and we put on that suit, we put on that outfit, we put on that face, we put on that set of skills, or we speak the language, but really we're going to be discovered at any time to be that fraud. And this is something that we need to contend with. And so basically, I remember seeing a while ago, somebody sent this out to me. It was a picture of the imposter syndrome kind of, scene in a visual. And the picture was Big Bird. If you remember Big Bird from Sesame Street, Big Bird sitting in a conference room, you know, big giant bird, you know, three times the size of the other people in there, surrounded by 10 people in their business suits, all with their laptops, and they're diligently just typing away at their laptops. And here's Big Bird just sitting there exposed with these yellow feathers just hanging out everywhere. And that's the way we feel sometimes when we're in situations. It's a funny scenario to think about, but if you can always envision Big Bird and think of yourself as that picture, it will help you to understand how our perception can make us feel so enormously unsuited for where we're supposed to be. And it can be a real challenge for us. And that's what it's like many, many times when we're at work or we're in those situations. The concept of I'm going to be found out. And how does this come about? Really, the imposter syndrome can come about with anybody, regardless of your situation. It's across races, it's across genders, it's across economic statuses, and it can definitely affect anybody. But also, too, some of it can have to do with our culture. Some of it can have to do with our family and our upbringing and our perception of ourselves based upon some of the successes that we've had. Also, anxiety. You can have all the skills and you can have even the self-esteem, but anxiety can definitely feed into that. And so it happens a lot of times when we make transitions. So when we're going into a new situation, that's when we're going to be seeing it the most. It's a brand new job. It's a brand new church that we're going into, a brand new community, a new meeting that we've never been to before. You know, a new date that we're going on. Whenever there's a transition and we're not used to it, we could be faced with that. And so it doesn't necessarily mean that we have low self-esteem. It can be that we're overly anxious or that we're a perfectionist. And because we can't seem to go into a new situation with everything being in a place of perfection, we're going to doubt ourselves. Even though in our last role, we felt really good about where we were and what we were doing. And sometimes we feel undeserving and we feel inadequate. So that's the reality of what that's about. And so I want to give you an example from the Bible about Mephibosheth. That's a mouthful. And Mephibosheth is one of my favorite characters in the Bible. And he was the son of Jonathan and the grandson of Saul. So if you're familiar with the Bible, you will know that Saul was anointed to be the king of Israel when the people really just wanted, they wanted somebody. They just wanted flesh and blood. And God kept saying, you know, I'm your king, you know. And if you appoint a king that's in the human form, there's going to be problems. And there were. And Saul was a disaster. But his son Jonathan and the predecessor, King David, were best friends. They loved one another. And when King David was on the throne, now, keep in mind, he had been terrorized by Saul. Saul was his mentor. Saul was the person that was supposed to be training him and bringing him along the ropes. But Saul tried to kill him. Saul was jealous of him. It was a disaster. But when King David was on the throne, he developed this loving brotherhood with Saul's son, Jonathan. And when Saul and Jonathan died, he had made a promise to Jonathan that he would be faithful to him always. And even though there was disaster around Saul's lineage and everything that was around Saul, David kept his promise. So in 2 Samuel 9, David basically simply asked, is there anyone still left in the house of Saul whom I can show kindness to for Jonathan's sake? And he said this to Ziba the servant, and Ziba the servant said, there is still a son of Jonathan, and he is lame in both feet. And so I'm just going to read to you from this passage so you can understand a little bit about what it was like when David reached out and basically, you know, inquired about this. And so he said, David had him brought over, and when Mephibosheth, son of Jonathan, the son of Saul, came to David, he bowed down to pay him honor. And David said, Mephibosheth. And he said, at your service, he replied. David said, don't be afraid, for I will surely show you kindness for the sake of your father, Jonathan. I will restore to you all the land that belonged to your grandfather Saul, and you will always eat at my table. Mephibosheth bowed down and said, what is your servant that you should notice a dead dog like me? That is the reality of this. Think about what this was about. Here, people were afraid. If they had anything to do with Saul, they were afraid at this point. And David knew that. And he had him brought over and told him that he was receiving him and that he was going to give him all of this land. But because Mephibosheth had this feeling about himself, he was thinking about who he really was in relationship to what he thought David was going to want and desire in his kingdom. He thought of himself as a dead dog. But David put him at his table. He put him right there where all the other sons belonged. He made him a son from somebody who had been or could have been abandoned, murdered, ignored, exiled, any number of things. David decided to do that. But many, many times when we're in situations where we're put at the table of somebody, we are captive to the way that we see ourselves. Sometimes we feel like stepchildren. Sometimes it's like when people are adopted and they never really feel like they're that birth child. That adoption status is always lingering there over them, that am I really, really a true son or a true daughter? And that's what happens a lot of times when we feel like that character. And so a lot of times we'll get perpetually hyper-focused on others who we think do deserve to be those sons, deserve to be sitting at the table, deserve in whatever we believe to be the ones that inherit what we're after. And so because of that, we just become very fixated on what we're not instead of what we are. And so the story goes on. Mephibosheth is there. He's at the table. He plus his servants, his son, everybody's at that table. The story goes on. And then later on, there's all sorts of things that happen. Ziba ends up lying to the king and making up lies about Mephibosheth and inheriting land. David goes out to battle. He ends up losing his son. It's all havoc just takes place in David's life. It's a terrible time. There's all this debacle that he's dealing with. And he comes back from battle. And I want to read this to you. It's in 2 Samuel 19 about what happens after this. Keep in mind, he takes in Mephibosheth. Everything was fine as far as David was concerned. But this is what happens. So David loses his son, comes back from battle, had a horrible experience, and there's Mephibosheth. And in verse 24, Mephibosheth, Saul's grandson, also went down to meet the king when David was coming back from battle. He had not taken care of his feet or trimmed his mustache or washed his clothes from the day the king left until the day he returned safely. When he came from Jerusalem to meet the king asked him, "Why didn't you go with me, Mephibosheth?" He said, "My lord, the king, since I, your servant, am lame, I said, I will have my donkey saddled and will ride on it so I can go with the king. But Ziba, my servant, betrayed me, and he has slandered your servant to my lord and king. My lord, the king, is like an angel of God, so do whatever you wish. All my grandfather's descendants deserve nothing but death from my lord, the king. But you gave your servant a place among those who eat at your table. So what right do I have to make any more appeals to the king?" So basically, at this point, Mephibosheth is still thinking the way he was thinking before he was sitting at the table. And he came looking horribly. And by the way, when a lot of times when men are depressed, that's one of the biggest ways that you can determine that they're depressed is by their appearance. Because that's the way it shows a lot of times in men. Their beards are grown out. They don't take care of their hair is overgrown. They're not changing their clothes. That's something that you can definitely tell as a sign for depression. And so Mephibosheth got himself to a place where he was depressed. And, you know, yes, he was betrayed by Ziba. But the point of the matter is here David loses his son. He goes through hell. He comes back and he's asking Mephibosheth, "Why weren't you with me? Like, I made you one of my sons. Like, why weren't you with me?" And all Mephibosheth could think about was himself, what he lost. And yes, he said a lot of things to him. But really, at the end of the day, the problem was about the way Mephibosheth saw himself, not the way David saw him, but the way Mephibosheth did. And so a lot of times what happens is that when we have that mindset, we get caught up in our own drama. Right? We get caught up in our own thinking instead of understanding that we're in a position where we have a job to do. We're in a position where we have the authority to make a difference. But because of our own thoughts about ourselves, we get caught up in drama, we get caught up in everybody else, and we're looking for more affirmation than really what people are going to give you. That's one of those things that you learn is you're not going to have a lot of affirmation in your life. Yes, it's good when you get it, but just celebrate when you do, because there's a lot of days where you're just going to have to keep flying by the seat of your pants and you're not necessarily going to get a lot of feedback. You probably will if you really make a major mistake. You'll get that feedback. But life is not about that. Life is about us sometimes having to just really keep it moving and keep showing up and keep doing our best. And it's just showing up is about 80% of the battle with anything that we do. You just keep showing up. It's not overthinking it. Just go and do it. And eventually you'll become an expert at what you're doing, even though you think maybe that you don't deserve to be there. And I've seen people that literally they've been given the keys, right? Someone has given them the keys. And instead of them just sticking those keys in that lock and turning them and walking through the door, they end up getting so caught up at the sideways glances of the people around them and, you know, what people have to say and what the atmosphere is. And the truth of the matter is you just walk through that door and you take over the thing that you've been given. If it's one little cubicle, if it's one little task that's been assigned, if it's a whole castle, whatever it is, to go in there. And we're not always going to get that applause. Many times when we're put in positions, it's going to ruffle feathers. And I remember my oldest daughter, Hannah, we went to a resort one time and we were going into the first night of the dinner at this resort. It was a big buffet. And as we walked in, they had all of the wait staff lined up on both sides of the room. And as we walked through, they applauded everybody as they passed through to go to the buffet. And she was so excited about it. And she was like, this is what I would like every day of my life. I just walk out of my bedroom and I walk into the room and there's lines of people just applauding me, you know? And so we laughed about it. But the truth of the matter is that some people, they really need so much more affirmation than others. And that's where you're going to get tripped up because, you know, as much as we would love to have that type of a welcome, it's very few and far between that you're ever going to get that. And so I guess the real question is where do you see yourself? Are you a dead dog or a son, right? Or a daughter? Because there's a big difference between the way Mephibosheth saw himself and the way David saw him. As soon as David saw that he was the son of Jonathan, that was a done deal. That was a done deal. He was royalty. He was going to have everything that all of David's children had. There was no difference between him and everybody else that was there in the palace. But to Mephibosheth, he had to get from feeling like a dead dog to being a son. And sometimes that's a pretty big leap. So I want to also mention that the name Mephibosheth is very interesting. It means from the mouth of shame. Oh, there's that word again, right? Didn't we talk about shame in our first season when we talked about the episode, My Knees Are Bleeding? Shame came up a lot. We talked about shame a lot, and there it is again. This is something that keeps getting in the way of people being able to move to that next level of their lives. Or another version of the meaning of that name is one who destroys shame. So it can come from the mouth of shame to one who destroys it. And I love that because there's a swing there. It can swing from one side to the other, and the hope is that it will, because that was Mephibosheth's life. It was swinging from one to the other. And so here we are trying to deal with the concept of shame. And so one of the things that I want to mention is that when we think about sonship or daughtership, right, because that's really what Mephibosheth was struggling with, right, whether or not he was truly a son, there are some concepts, and I kind of put this together a while ago for some of my pastoral care clients, and I think it's been a pretty accurate read of what it means to struggle in this area. And so if we have a slave mentality, for instance, many times we live in fear, right? Because a slave is going to live in fear that at any time they could be abused, they could be beaten, they could be moved, they could be separated from their family or whatever the case may be. Slaves live in fear. We also have the concept of we're going to take the bread that falls from the table. So instead of going after the things that are really deserving to us, we're going to take whatever we can get. We're just going to take it, you know? And I think about the fact that we just recently adopted a new kitten who I love. His name is Ray Ray. And he was actually, you know, like rescued, and he was homeless for a while and lived in this, like, you know, horrible, abandoned, you know, place in Texas. And when we first got him in the house, he would eat every single thing that we put in front of him. I'm not kidding. Like, it, anything, constantly. The minute the food went down, he would eat up everything, every drop. And if you know anything about cats and dogs, you'll know that dogs do that, but cats don't do that. They nibble through the day. They take a little bit here and there. He would eat every bite. And it wasn't until after several weeks of him living with us that I knew that he really started to understand that he had a true home when he could leave some of that food there. When he could just take a little bit of food, and then he could go and take a nap, and then he would go back and trust that there was going to be that food there again. And when we don't have that sonship or daughtership mentality, a lot of times we're just like little Ray Ray, right? We just take whatever we can get, and we hoard, right? Because we don't have the confidence that we're really going to have the longevity of success. We don't see hope for freedom in these areas. We stay in bondage to things and sometimes people. Sometimes that slave mentality keeps us in relationships that we shouldn't be in. We have a fright or flight mentality, right? Well, Hagar in the Bible, she had a slave mentality, and she had a flight concept to her because she ran away. You know, this is too much for me and I'm going to run. And that's part of a concept that we have. Or Mephibosheth, that had the fright mentality. He just lived in fear. Even when he was safe in that palace, he lived in fear. We don't recognize abuse when we're in that place. We don't really have a value as a person in the house. I remember that there was this movie a long time ago called Casino. And in the movie, the mob guy was married to a prostitute. She originally had been a prostitute. And he really did love her, and it was kind of a crazy connection, but he did love her. But every time they would fight, the first thing she would say is, just give me my stuff. She just wanted her jewelry, she wanted her clothes, because she was thinking the whole time that it wasn't going to work out. She was thinking the whole time, I'm not a bride, I'm a prostitute. Like, she never graduated from that dead dog to that son, from that prostitute to that wife. And so as soon as everything started going sideways, all she wanted was to pack up her jewelry and her dresses and everything and go on her way, because that's what she was waiting to happen, for the shoe to drop at every time. And that's what slaves think about. The shoe is going to drop. The ceiling is going to fall. The sky is going to fall, right? Like that little nursery. And also they attach to the frantic acts of servants. Like, they're constantly, the only thing that keeps me as having value is what I do. Not who I am, but what I do. And so constantly just having to do and prove themselves. So no wonder you have this, you know, imposter syndrome, because you feel like if you stop performing, you're not going to be valuable in that particular area. And I want to read a quote. I freed 1,000 slaves. This is by Harriet Tubman. I freed 1,000 slaves. I could have freed 1,000 more if only they knew they were slaves. And that's what it's like when you're in that role. You don't understand that you have the ability to perform at a different level. You have the ability to be a person at a different level. But it's your own mind, right? I'll use myself, because I have to struggle with it too. We use our own minds cause us to be held back from the things that we're supposed to do. So what I want to really bring out is, when we have those mentalities, it can become captivating in our lives. And so one of the things that I want to mention is, there's a scripture that says that we want to take every thought captive and make it obedient to Christ. So we want to take those thoughts that we have, and we want to put them in prison. We want to incarcerate those thoughts, and we want to allow our minds to be geared and helped through scriptures and through the knowledge of God and understanding the way God thinks about us. That's the best raising of self-esteem, is not what we feel as we are around John or Sue, but the way that God thinks about us. And we just need to be able to have the courage to be able to go to that next level. It's always scary when we stretch, when we're in transition. When Joshua was going into the promised land, He didn't know what he was doing, and God had to say over and over again, be strong and courageous. He didn't think he had the ability to be a leader. Are you kidding me? He probably was so ticked that Moses died because he's now in charge of all these grumbling people, and now he's got to go in and take this land. But God just kept reminding him that you need to be courageous. And I think about The Wizard of Oz. Boy, I'm talking about a lot of movies today, but movies are powerful. In The Wizard of Oz, I think about the lion who was so afraid all the time, and all he kept saying was, I don't have courage. And all of what he went through, witches and warlocks and journeys and flying monkeys to finally get to the wizard, and the wizard said, you have plenty of courage, I am sure. All you need is confidence in yourself. And he said, true courage is facing danger when you are afraid. And so I want to proclaim over all of you today that you increase courage, that you be kind to yourself, that you challenge those perceptions about yourself. And if nobody is applauding around you, be the one to applaud for yourself. Thank you so much for listening and have a wonderful day.
In collaboration with IML Productions, this has been your host, Ginger Wilk, with That Which Matters. Thank you for listening.